From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest today played on some of the most epical and trend-setting albums of the 70s. I think of Caravanserai or Azteca or one of my favorites of all time, the first Betty Davis album, the real Betty Davis. I would do more stuff to introduce you, but we're out of time. Sorry, I'm kidding. My guest today is, of course, the guy who went on to found a little group after all these achievements called Journey. His name is Neil Schon, and he's auctioning off a few of his prize guitars on July 31st at Heritage Auctions. So, Neil Schon, Neil, I can't thank you enough for being here, man. This is really thrilling to me.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's nice to be getting ready to play back in the world. And we're here in Chicago rehearsing. Everything's sounding really good and we're having a blast.
You're rehearsing. Are you about to go back out on the road again soon?
We are, but we're playing Lollapalooza on the 31st here. We're co-headlining with Post Malone. And we are also playing on the 29th at the Aragon Ballroom, which is like original stomping grounds for Journey here in Chicago. And we're going to play a nice extended set, probably close to it. I bet you by the time we actually get on stage, it'll probably end up being about 3 hours.
I think of you in two ways, as being a guy who was a part of that big jam band movement out of the Bay Area and in the 70s, and also somebody who found himself in these situations where you always got the right chemistry with people, be it with Carlos Santana or Greg Rolie or Greg Errico or Steve Perry. It was always to me about the kind of chemistry you have, the people you played with.
You know, I've been really fortunate and blessed to have met so many great musicians in my lifetime and, you know, listened to a lot of different music growing up and influenced by many different types of music, a lot of soul and R&B that people don't know, because Journey has not really been about that for, you know, many, many years and never really a blues thing. But my roots are all in blues and R&B, really. That's the stuff that I know the best.
See, I'm glad you brought up the blues and R&B stuff, because I was going to say you played on one of my favorite albums with Paul Jackson and Lenny White. You're playing on Azteca with those guys. I think of you as, again, a kind of a jam guy, but, you know, they're very much a blues and R&B guy. And let's talk about Azteca for a minute, because that's a great configuration, a really cool band.
Wow, you are going way back here, man. Azteca, was never completely in the band. As you know, there was like about 25 members in that band, and it was really hard to get organized, is what I recall. With Coke Escobedo and everybody. And you can imagine, you know, trying to get that many guys together and in the same place at the same time. It's not that easy, especially in those days. And so what's really interesting about the Azteca story is I played one show with them in San Francisco, and that is where I met Steve Perry, believe it or not. A friend of mine that was in the road crew for Santana, that became my friend Jackie Villanueva, had introduced me to him after we played that night. He apparently was a friend of Jackie's cousins. And so he asked me to give Steve a ride to his car. And so I gave him a ride to his car. And that was it. You know, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know that he sang. And then we met a couple more times years after that, down in Los Angeles, playing on the Strip and little clubs. And he came back and he said, hey, I'm a singer. And I go, yeah, Greg is our singer. It's great to see you again. I had no clue how great he was or who he was, you know.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because this fits into R&B and that kind of thing, because, you know, you can't think about, for me, Steve Perry singing without that kind of Sam Cooke melisma, and that's an R&B thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that was a flavor that came into the band, I think, that truly set us apart from everyone else, even though, you know, critics like to categorize us in those days along the lines with many other bands. I never thought that we sounded like them because of that. You know, Steve brought in his roots, which were Sam Cooke and Otis Redding, many others. And it was, you know, R&B soul. So it was rock and soul to me. Still kind of where my head and heart are at always when I'm playing.
I feel that because as you're just talking to you about these things, again, all the great R&B bands, what you want to do when you want to see these guys play was just to sort of step out and let things go. And I think about, you know, the Santana Buddy Miles thing, and but also about the stuff on Caravanserai, like Song of the Wind. You know, that feels like a kind of a jazz R&B jam to me.
You know what? It was totally a jam. That whole record, from what I recall about it, was pretty much a jam. You know, Carlos was in the middle of wanting to go into a completely different direction than we had gone in on the third album that I was lucky enough to be a part of. But Song of the Wind was simply a couple chords that Carlos came up with. And we started jamming in the studio one day and they rolled tape. And I ended up playing the first solo and he comes in the middle. And then I played the last solo going out. And we're just improvising, you know. It's a great way to make records. You know, I've made a lot of records like that as opposed to sitting down and really working out things. I mean, they're both great aspects about making records and you know, attaining different audiences. But the new journey here is we're about to encompass and put everything in one. You know, we have all the hits I think that we'd ever need. We have a good, you know, a new record on the way that is just really slamming, I think. I think it sounds amazing with the addition of Narda, Michael Walden, and Randy Jackson.
You just took me right back to the 70s talking about that lineup.
Yep. And it's funky and it's rocking hard and very melodic. He's been, you know, amazing to work with Arnell vocally, you know, and Arnell just loves him, man. It was really great to connect those two guys and that they got along so well. It's so important making a great record that vocals are like really, really tuned into the songs. And Narda's extremely easy guy to get along with and very, very multi-talented and still just so bionic on drums. And then we just decided, you know, something that I've been wanting to do for a long time was have two drummers in Journey. And so Dean Castronova is back in the mix with Narda. And so, wow. Man, I got to tell you, yesterday was the first day our front house mixer was in the other room laying it down as we were rehearsing. And I went in to listen afterwards and I was just, wow, this is a freight train now.
By the way, for those just tuning in, it's a treat. And my guest, I'm thrilled to have him here, is Neil Sean, who is about to be a big part of a Neil Sean guitar auction, Heritage Auctions on July 31st. And also that day playing Lollapalooza with Post Malone. So all these worlds crashing together. But for those of you who didn't know that Randy Jackson had a career before American Idol, he was a premier bassist. And Narda Michael Walden, who additionally playing with John McLaughlin, just one of the great sort of funk jazz drummers of all time, produced an incredible Don Cherry record in addition to other things.
And Jeff Beck, you know, the records that he's done with Jeff Beck and co-wrote.
Again, so many credits to list here, but this is, takes me back to where we got started, which is that you being in a jam band. And I even think about the beginning of I always want to ask you about this. The first Journey song you wrote, Light Witches, it starts off with the basically 16 bars of jamming before you get into the song.
Yep, we're getting back into that, which is, for me, it's not getting back into it. It's just coming into a new era for the band, a completely new chapter. And for me, I want to encompass it all. I want to encompass the beginning and where we are now. We're actually playing a couple songs off the first record right now that we started rehearsing the other day, and it sounds really awesome, man.
So often with, if anybody is ever lucky enough to see Journey, and it's with you and Steve and Jonathan Cain, who you just mentioned, I mean, at a certain point, so many of the songs started off with you basically sort of jamming for a little bit, and then in the best ways, Journey to me always sound like a club band. You know what I mean? Just there's that kind of sense of taking your time to get into the groove.
Maybe in the very beginning, but it hasn't sounded like that for years. but you know, it's fine with me. I love clubs and I love, you know, going to blues clubs and sitting in and jamming. That's definitely a part of my history with Albert King and B.B. King. And it all started there for me.
See, again, you're talking about these guys, so people don't know Albert King, guitar master, who basically could, like, you know, lay it down and jam and sing at the same time. But, you know, just saying the journey, sort of taking your time to get into a song and thinking about the way, even Don't Stop Believing, you don't jump into it right away. You just sort of take your time to lay down those opening chords. And that to me is always sound like a way of saying we're going to like take our time and make this work. And we trust that the audience will follow along with us.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, to me, it's just a setup for vocals. It's completely the way I think all the time. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, I mean, music today has changed so radically. It's not, you know, the same music that I grew up with or the same music I'm into right now. You know, I'd still love the classic music that, you know, turned the whole world around for many years now, whether it be R&B and soul or, you know, the electric blues coming out of Britain. You know, I always think like that. I think we need to set up the beginning of Don't Stop Believing. I wouldn't call that a jam. That's, you know, sticking the chords in someone's mind before the vocal actually starts. And so to me, a jam is like doing a Bitches Brew. Miles Davis, that's a jam. And I've been doing a lot of that at my house during the pandemic, making outside loops for myself and trying to stay in tune with my fans and audience.
The explosion hurts my mind being blown to hear that Neil Sean is sitting at home listening to Bitches Brew. But what we're talking about, you know, is that way that this kind of musical stew, when you got started, it was all part of this kind of same thing. You know, everybody was probably listening to everybody else. You know, we know that Miles was listening to Santana. Everything seemed like within reach in those days, didn't it?
The thing is, you know, that I loved about Miles and Santana, that nobody was afraid to go anywhere at any moment. And everybody had to listen because things would happen on stage that were not rehearsed. You know, we're kind of getting back into that. Just some hand signals, you know, look, check it out, watch. And then I'm going to put up an arm, you know, we're going to go to the B section or the chorus or whatever for each song. But we're going to loosen things up a bit like that so things can fly on their own. You know, that's where the magic comes from. It's not from being stuck in a box musically where it's exactly like the record every night. You know, that's very easy to do. And it's very easy to emulate for anybody else to do too as well. Journey probably has more tribute bands than I've ever seen of any band in the world ever. I don't want to do the same thing they're doing, which they're doing what we did like a long time ago. So I want to keep on moving forward and doing some, you know, different things. But, you know, these guitars, I've been collecting guitars for my whole life. And, you know, I had about 800 guitars. And basically, you know, I had 350 guitars in our house at home that my wife let me have. And we were like crawling over things. And I was working on them during the pandemic and sort of getting used to playing them and knowing them individually. And then I went up to the warehouse where Journey, you know, has two sets of gear, and it was jam-packed and I couldn't find anything. So I was like, it's really time to let go of some of these axes, and they're not my, you know, go-tos any longer, even though they were. And some of them are just vintage, so clean that you could not imagine that they're vintage. You know, 63 Strat that doesn't have one scratch on it, a 59 Les Paul that doesn't have one scratch on it. Looks like somebody bought it, stuck it in a case, and stuck it under a bed. And then, you know, you have my Road Dog guitars that are in there, you know, Les Paul, that I put a Floyd Rose on. I was like the first one ever to do that. A lot of people thought it was just plain crazy. And now, look, there's a whole line of Gibson Les Pauls called the Easy Access model that I helped them develop. I thought to myself, I could either, you know, do a museum and put these guitars in a museum, or, you know, I could let somebody else enjoy them. And I thought about it, and I seriously thought about a museum, and Joe Bonamassa and myself even talked about it. But I really feel like when you open something like that, it would be much like opening a restaurant to where you have to be there managing it like every day. And I'm still like in the game of playing live. That's where my heart is. I love our fans and I want to keep on performing until I can anymore, you know? And that's probably going to be when my day comes.
But we're going to take a short break from my mind being totally destroyed by my guest, Neil Sean, who's done so much. And now is having an auction of some of his favorite acts at Heritage Auction on July 31st. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. I'm jamming, of course, kidding, with Neil Sean. It's the treatment. You were talking a bit about Miles Davis, and I can't sit here and not ask you about what it was like to play on what I think is one of the most important funk albums of the 70s, that first Betty Davis album, with his ex-wife.
It was right after the Santana band at that point, after Caravan Sarai disbanded, and before I really started Journey. I was playing with Greg Rico at the time, former Sly and the Family Stone drummer, and the bassist, Larry Graham, from original Sly Stone. And we had a power trio we were doing, and it was like heavy rocking funk. And it was like something I'd never heard before. There was a lot of Hendrix in it, but there was a lot of Sly in it, obviously because of the rhythm section. It was an open plane for me just to go all over and do anything I wanted to do. And Larry Graham was singing lead vocals with his baritone voice. And so it was really, really different. And I really loved it and felt like something could really happen with that band. And then, you know, Larry kind of just, he got cold feet at the last minute. He wanted to do more of a straightforward funk thing. So he did Graham Central Station, which Greg and I played in for a bit. And then both of us left. It was really fun being in the band though, because I was always over in Oakland. I was at Larry's house, and Freddie Stone was over there, Sly's brother. And I absolutely knew how to play zero funk, okay? Like clean funk guitar. I played blues guitar, killer, right? I knew all, you know, the cast and studied them. But when it comes to playing like really stripped down funk, like Freddie played. And so he gave me a lot of lessons over there. And I walked away with a lot of knowledge of that. And then shortly after that, you know, Betty Davis had contact Greg Rico. Greg and I were playing together. So he suggested that I play on the record too with Larry, because we had been playing together for quite some time. And that record is so funny. It was very ahead of time. Now that I listen to it and see how many people have come up to me about that record, and it was done such a long time ago, and people are just still discovering it. And she was ahead of her time. She was like rapping, singing, rapping way back then before there was any, you know, rap.
You were just talking about who's playing with you, Greg Rico and Larry Graham, but also Merle Sanders on that record. I mean, it's one of the great, like, sort of like funk rhythm sections of all time. And also what she was doing too on that record is just being really kind of open. And you can't imagine there being like a Madonna or basically any of these kind of women singers without the example of Betty Davis.
Betty was wild. She was a free spirit is what I recall and remember about her. Very outspoken on what she wanted. It was a very interesting record for me to make. I was just like, wow, this is really different. But when I listened back to it many years later, I was like, this was ahead of time, definitely. You know, I had many great guitarists come up to me, like Dole Brummel. And he came up to me and goes, at an AM show once, he goes, man, that Betty Davis record. I go, you heard that? And he goes, I love that record. And a lot of people just tell me how much they love that record.
Is what I was saying to you at the outset of the show, that you've been a part of so many records that have really drew a line in the sand and changed music. And to go to all those things and be a part of all those adventures to then starting Journey was in its way felt like it was constantly exploring things. I mean, those first three Journey records do all kinds of stuff, don't they?
They sure do. And we continue to, you know, on the new album, we're again showing the diversity of the band musically and bringing some new things that people haven't heard that I think they're going to be very surprised with. You know, Arnell, I saw him for the first time yesterday. We have this song called Rain that we did in the studio. And it was me kind of messing around with a funky whammy pedal that goes from a bass octave to a high octave. And I was playing this really funky line. And Narda started playing these just ass-kicking drums. And it was just a jam, right? So we listened back to it, and we decided to make it a song. And the jam stayed as it was, and we wrote around the way that I constructed it as we played it. And Arnell goes, that's my favorite song on a record.
To me, what you're talking about, that kind of sense of exploration and all these musicians that you're talking about, that's really what the Bay Area was for a long time. You know, you had somebody like Merle Saunders who could go from Betty Davis to playing with Jerry Garcia to doing jazz stuff. You're going from Santana to then working with Greg and Larry Graham and then Betty and then going off to Journey with John Cain. You find yourself in these situations where it's been about chemistry as much as anything else. And we can feel that chemistry happening in these situations almost immediately for you.
Absolutely. You know, there's always chemistry with great musicians. And so, you know, it's part of being a musician for real. It's just like, you know, opening your mind and listening a lot, you know, listen to everybody that you're playing with and where they're coming from. You shouldn't think so much. I mean, everybody today think so much, and you can hear it in their playing. You know, they have there's a lot of technical young guitar players today that are doing things that I couldn't even dream of doing, you know, but they're acrobatics of the guitar. They're, you know, just sweeping, and the speed is so fast that, you know, it goes by me. If it goes by me, it's going by everybody else. It's just so fast that you don't have any time to latch on to it. And they're like sped up scales. And, you know, I never studied scales. To this day, you know, I've been playing many, many years now. And I've never studied scales. I just listen. I'll sit down with a keyboard at home and, you know, I'll make up some really wild chords with a spread on the keyboard that pretty much bigger spread that you can get on a guitar. And then I'll sit there and jam around it and find where those chords take me and what I hear on top of those chords, as opposed to knowing what I'm playing, if it makes sense, you know. And I've often talked to many people that are very well schooled, and they said, stay like that. Because I've often thought, well, maybe I should really study and learn exactly what I'm doing. And they said, no, don't, because then you're just going to have to forget about it to get back to where you are now.
It's a treat when we're talking with a man who's continually taking in new experiences as a talent and a guitarist, Neil Sean, primarily a Journey, but many, many other things. And he's playing on 31st with Post Malone. Also, there's an auction of his guitars at a Heritage Auction House. And just, I've got a printout here in front of me of the guitars. And you were talking about that Les Paul, which is described here in the listing as the Don't Stop Believing guitar.
That's right. That guitar has been on more tours than you can imagine. Definitely from Escape on, and before that as well. But that guitar was all over the Escape record, which just received a Diamond Award. It's on Who's Crying Now? It's on Stone in Love. It's on Keep on Running. It's on Don't Stop Believing. And probably many more that I can't even remember was on the record. But that whole show that's out there of us in Houston in 1981 with Steve Perry, it's all over that show. And so that is exactly the same guitar. You know, I'd done a couple mods to it over the years, and I actually used it with the Abraxas Pull record, which was a record I did with the ex-Santana guys for a second. In between when we had a layoff period with Journey, and then we went back to Journey, you know, it was just a side project, but it was all over that record. And I've used that guitar on a lot of records. It's an excellent guitar.
Since this list says a Don't Stop Believing guitar, walk us through the origin of that song. You just talked about a diamond certification for the album. There are people whose entire catalogs don't go diamond, let alone one album. So what's the story of that song? Give us the origin of that.
Well, you know what? When Jonathan came into the band, we got together and we started putting together new material for, you know, our new coming album that we had not created yet. Greg Raleigh had just left. And, you know, he had just had enough of touring at that time. He said, you know, I'm just kind of burnt out with this and wanted to start a family. So John came in one day and he started playing the opening chords that ends up being the verses as well as the chorus, and the vocal just changes on top of it. And so he's playing, you know, the keyboard part, but there was really no bass line at that point. And I started playing bass guitar ideas of what to play against it. And I was trying to think of more of a Motown type thing. And that's how it came about. You know, it's the craziest arrangement because you have a verse, right? You have an intro, verse, then a breakdown, then the guitar solo came. And I started just doing sort of a symphony line because I used to listen to a lot of symphonies. And it sounded like a symphony line that they would play as a section and speed up. And that made Stephen John think about the lyrical side of the song. She took a midnight train going anywhere. So they thought that the guitar reminded them of a train traveling on the tracks and speeding up. And so that's where the lyric came from, was the inspiration from the guitar. So it was a really different type of arrangement compared to other arrangements that were on the radio and that were being played because, you know, usually it's like a verse. If there is a B section, there's a B section and it's quick, and then it gets to the chorus. And the chorus doesn't come and Don't Stop Believing till the very end of the song. And I play the chorus melody on the guitar solo at the very end before Steve even sings it. So it's a wild arrangement. But you know what? It's really crazy is when we finished the whole Escape record and we were in Fantasy Studios in Berkeley at the time, and we were getting close to getting really great mixes and hearing how the stuff really sounded. I heard that song and I went, I think there's something here special. I think this song is going to be bigger than everything. And this is like back in 81, man. And they released it and it didn't get as big as the other songs that they released at that time on the radio. But to have it be like this worldwide anthem now, is funny that I could sense that it was going to be huge. I just didn't know it would take that many years.
I have to say, and I could do this for hours with you, so you have to come back and do the show again if you would like, but we're out of time. And Neil, I can't thank you enough for spending the time and talking about this. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
My guest is Neil Sean, who, in addition to playing Lollapalooza with Post Malone on July 31st, there's an auction of a handful of a mere 20 or so of his over 300 guitars, including the one that played on the Escape albums we just heard from many of the songs there, including Don't Stop Believing. Our production staff includes John Meek, who's recording today, Paul Smith and Desmond Taylor. The show is edited and produced by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.